The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 400 for Monday, June 4th, 2012. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in some questions, you send in your tips, we provide some answers, or at least the process of how we might get that answer, and some tips of our own. And then, actually, today, we're going to talk about something a little bit different, but that's because it's show number 400. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in Fairfield, Connecticut, where we're not going to talk about any of the things. Well, no, I think we're going to touch on some of the things that Dave mentioned that we almost always do. Yes, again, John Efron in Fairfield, Connecticut. And then back up to you.
Hey, Pilot Pete here. Glad to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Happy 400, John. Happy 400, Pete.
Yeah, happy 400. That's a big
unbelievable
milestone.
So when did we start this again, Dave?
So you guys
going
to stick with this?
we started this. No, this is it. This is the last episode. No, it's not at all. We started this on June. The first public episode was June 13th, 2005. Of course, there were several, not that many, but several test attempts, if you will, that we did internally that we never released, just to kind of get an idea of what we wanted to do. And then, of course, and that first episode was just us talking, I think, about Tiger, what we liked about it, John. And of course, we had no idea of doing the Q&A thing when we started the show. That was episode, I believe, episode number three.
Because we knew people wanted to hear what we thought about all things Apple.
That's right.
Quickly learned that, well,
that there was something better for us to do.
Maybe that's not the best agenda. Because you know, number one, there are a lot of people that do that.
Right.
And number two, just between you and I think our accumulated knowledge over the years, some of which I think we're going to share some of our inspirations for how we acquired that knowledge. But we realized, you know what?
We were better suited to do what we do. And I think that worked out very, very well.
So. You guys didn't even talk about the iPhone or the iPad on that show either. You know, I mean, stuck straight with the Mac.
Imagine. Well, we were under NDA for the iPhone and the iPad back in 2005. Yeah, that's right. Deep cover. That's right. It's actually important to note that this is show number 400, obviously, and we're doing a little celebration here. And the topic of the episode will be a departure from what we normally do, but hopefully something that's as interesting for you to listen to and fun for you to listen to as it is for us to do what we're about to do here. But the next show, number 401, is going to be recorded on June 13th, 2012. So that'll actually be our 7th anniversary. We will acknowledge it there, but we need to get back to what we normally do. And so that show will mostly be that. Of course, it'll also have been after the WWDC keynote and that sort of thing. So, but it will be a more traditional show. But very interesting to have these two kind of back to back. I tried to organize it so that we had show number 400 on the 7th anniversary, but I didn't want to skip a week for the sake of skipping a week. So anyway, so the idea for today, we've always done sort of retrospective stuff. We've talked about our history of computers. We've talked about our history of internet connectivity or connectivity, I should say. But as John and I were tossing around ideas, we came up with the concept of how tech has made our lives better. And specifically, you know, not just the technology, but then what we used it for and how that's actually made things better. It's actually very easy to say, oh yeah, you know, technology has made our lives better. It's also probably just as easy to say technology has made our lives worse.
Double-edged sword.
Yes. But today we're mostly, at least the intention is to focus on the former. And so we'll give some specific examples, and I'm sure we'll throw it all around here. So John, are you eager to kick this off, or shall I kick it off?
I'm going to kick it off.
Go.
So, you know, I'm looking back and thinking back when I was a wee lad and looking at some of the technology that I think inspired me And looking back to some of the early days, Dave,
yep.
and see, some may chuckle at this, but a lot of it revolves around RF or radio. And one of the first examples that I can think of in my head here, so I'll mention a couple, but I still think back to when I was little. And one of the things, you know, we're talking preteen here, or maybe, you know, double digits. One of the things that always drew me and was always something that I was just attracted to from day one. My dad was a techie too, I think, in a sense, and that, you know, he was always tinkering with things and building things more on the mechanical side than the electronic side. I kind of picked up the electronic baton, but radio was something that I was always interested in. And I still remember back that one of the first things that I enjoyed using when I was a young person was a basic AM radio. And actually it was something that just fascinated me, because here's this box and there are people in it talking to me.
Yeah.
And telling me about, so, you know, and I still think, yep, they still have it. So one of the stations, I think it was a local station, it's still in existence, WICC 600 AM.
I remember that.
And I would listen to that, and it would have, you know, news and even back then I was always, you know, kind of interested in what's happening in the world. So I would listen to news, weather, and it was AM, you know, but it was a local station. And I look now and it apparently is still in existence, which, you know, amazes me. You know, I know a lot of people right now don't listen to radio anymore. You know, I still do, even in the car. I'll listen to AM and FM.
It is funny, ironic rather, to start off our 400th podcast talking about the great things that exist with radio. Right. I mean, it's both completely fitting and then also, you know, diametrically opposed. But you're right. Yeah, it's I'm with you.
Some of the data points that then got me more interested, which I would say, you know, getting more into what is technology done for me in the social aspect. So then past that, then I got a bit more interested. And I think the next one that I moved to was shortwave.
Okay.
So of course, AM is short range, and then shortwave. Now, once I got, and I think, you know, I got myself a shortwave radio now, as most of you probably know, or if you don't, shortwave is global, and that you can hear stuff happening all over the world. A lot of times you have to wait until the evening because there's all sorts of things with radiation patterns and things that are happening during the day, but usually at night. And that was another thing, is that all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, I'm listening to stuff in other countries, especially, you know, some kind of weird countries like, you know, Radio Moscow and Radio Cuba, and, you know, kind of leaning towards, you know, doing stuff that was forbidden, you know. So listening to broadcasts from these countries all over the world. I don't think I ever got into QSL cards. That was what some people did. You could write to these shortwave stations. They would send you a card back saying, yes, we confirm that you heard us. And so that was very cool. And then the part that got interactive. So that was the passive part. But then the part that got interactive is that, and this started in high school, and this was right around the CB craze, which is probably a good thing. So CB, for those that don't know, some do, some don't. But that was basically something that allowed people to talk to other people with a radio without having to get a license. You could just go to your local Radio Shack or whatever and get a radio.
That's right.
It was big in the 70s.
It was huge.
And it was. Yeah. There was a whole culture around it, but I kind of fell into, and this was probably my first encounter with social networking.
Now I have a question. Pete mentioned the 70s, because the 70s were when I was introduced to, who's hitting their mic stand? Is that me?
It might be me. I'll be
okay.
Here. I'll
Yo, it's careful. Your foot. Okay. That's the problem. All right. You're gonna be thrown out of here if you keep doing that.
Yes, sir. Iser. I did it again. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. We either need to hear. I'm going to mute your mic stand while you move that around.
I'm going to move myself.
There you go. All right. So in the 70s was when I got introduced to CB from my father and my grandfather and my uncle, my father's brother. So all the men in that family were into CB, and that, you know, I was around it constantly. And then, of course, ham radio as well was huge. They all had base station. We had one at our house. My grandfather had one at his house, and they had been involved in CB and ham when they were kids. My dad and my uncle obviously were involved in that. So it was the 70s when I was introduced to CB, but I think your introduction to it Well, I'm curious as to when, because I knew you.
No, it was about
using,
the same.
Okay, all right. So
maybe late 70s, early 80s, because I think it was when I was in late middle or early high school, which was around the 70s or the 80s.
Yep.
But what happened then is, so, you know, I would get a radio, and then this is what got me hooked up with a lot of the people in the general area. I think I started with one in my car. So it was in the 80s. But this was the social networking of the time, because right. You could get on the radio.
So I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no, like I'm saying, is that, you know, I would get on the radio, we'd just get on a certain channel and just be like, hello, hello, and just hope that someone heard you. And, or turn around the dial. And typically there were already groups of people that already had, you know, the small social circle. And,
right.
You know, a lot of times it was kind of shot in the dark, in that you'd be like, hello, anybody out there? You know, breaker, breaker. You know, it was kind of corny.
But then, yeah,
you'd be like, hey, is anybody out there? And sometimes you'd hook up with somebody who you didn't even know. But a lot of times, I think I tended to flip around the dial and listen to people that already were creating kind of a chat circle. And that, you know, there was a group of people. They would try to take turns and just have and typically at night, you know, after school and stuff like that. And people would talk. And I was like, wow, this is really cool. And I met a lot of people through that who, you know, I'm still friends with to this day.
And, so you were actually using it in a, not because it was handed to you from your parents but you were using it to communicate with your peers. Most certainly.
I was using it as an extension of a passive radio,
right,
where, like I mentioned, was right, AM radio or shortwave, to an interactive medium. And right, I was like, oh, well, this one, hey, if, you know, I can get the guts to do this, I can pick up the mic and say, hi, it's
right,
me.
Right.
And so I was cool, taking the next step. And then I met up with people and to take it one more step, and then I'll hand it. Then I want to get your input. But then the next step was that I met up with some people that were quite savvy in electronics and learned how to do things with the radios that they weren't necessarily meant to do. And that could involve either, giving it a little more power, which I tend to frown upon, because you can do pretty much whatever you need to on a CB with 4 watts, which was the legal limit. Or, and here was the fun part, you can make the radio go to channels it may not be meant to go to. So you could kind of find these secret places to go when you didn't want to hang out with all the noobs or whatever you want to call them. So that introduced me to the aspect of, you got this technology, here's what it's meant to do. And here, if you know enough about electronics and to get a soldering iron and learn how to read schematics, you can make it do a little more than it was meant to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're right. You get different channels and do different things. Pete, you were trying to get a word in there.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was just interesting how you started on that with radio, because the one thing I was thinking of that certainly got me interested in technology early on, mid 70s, just before the CB fad came in. And do you guys remember in the back of the comic books, you could buy those little AM pen radios, and you'd clip it to a metal thing, like a downspout. It had to be something big and metal, a car antenna, but a downspout on a gutter, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And you'd get AM radio stations without batteries. And I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The AM signal was enough to power the electronics in this pen. And it was just a little earphone.
Oh, we had a receiver?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, like a crystal set.
Yeah.
I mean, crystal sets, yeah, you could do that too. So some of the Radio Shack kits, and I think I remember having some of those kits. So yeah, with the energy in the radio wave was enough to power it, right?
Yeah. And that was cool. I was like, I got to learn more about this. So started messing with that a little bit. And then, of course, did all the walkie-talkie things, but saved up my money.
Oh, I remember that, Channel 14.
Put the crystals in. Yeah, that was Channel 14. Then you could get the Radio Shack had some. You could buy, you know, crystals and listen to Channel 19 too, man, because that's where the professionals
scary
were.
Truckers.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So, yeah.
Cool.
Well, go, Dave. Radio was my start, I think, in touching on social networking and just learning about electronics and communications.
Yep.
And bringing it from, again, a passive thing to a social thing. But
yeah,
your turn.
No, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No, radio was, like I said, I mean, it was not something I ever used with my peers other than you, just because it wasn't, you know, I mean, I'm a couple years younger than you, but I think it was more it just wasn't the thing that people in my town did. Right. So, or at least not my friends there. So I never really got into it other than, again, communicating with you. which was great. All right. So I'm trying to think, changing gears a little bit here. In the concept of thinking about, you know, technology that's then allowed me to do things that I never would have been able to do. In 1994, I had taken a trip. I grew up in Connecticut and basically spent all of my life there. You know, we traveled to like Florida or something for vacations and that sort of thing. But for the most part, I lived in Connecticut and down in Fairfield County. And when I was whatever age I would have been in 1993, I guess, I took a trip out west and was out there with some friends. And I walked in to this is going somewhere and there is technology part of this, but it's all part of the story. So it was about 10:30 at night. We had flown into Denver, and then we drove pretty much all the way down to the Grand Canyon and then visited some other friends down there and then drove back and flew back in the course of a week. And I remember it was 10:30 at night. It was just outside of Flagstaff, Arizona. And we walked into what effectively was a 7-Eleven. It may very well have been a 7-Eleven, but it was sort of like that. And three things impressed me. One was that you could buy liquor at night, which you couldn't do in Connecticut because they, you know, after 8 o'clock, you couldn't do that. You could also buy guns and ammunition at 10:30 at night, which totally blew me away. And then the other thing that blew me away was that everyone that was in there looked me in the eye. And this was a very different thing from where I grew up. You know, growing up just outside of New York, it's very, very compressed. And everybody sort of has to create their own space. And a lot of that manifests itself in this, you know, kind of shoegazing thing. Right. So everybody, you know, sort of ignores everybody else. And it just blew me away. It was like, wow, it really can be different elsewhere. And that was the thing that made me decide to move. Now, we eventually, as most of you know, or have heard on the show, we eventually wound up moving to Austin. And I moved there with Lisa, and she was my girlfriend. We'd actually never lived together before, but trial by fire seemed to work out just fine. But we needed to pick a place to go. And this is where technology comes in. So this was 1994. I posted a message to a bunch of different news groups. The internet, I guess the web existed at this point, but it was very, very much in its infancy, certainly compared to where it is today.
All 76 websites, right?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, the Usenet was and still is this collection of news groups, and it was very, very active, and it was something that I'd been using for a very long time, well, relatively speaking. And so I wrote up this description of where we wanted to live, and I knew I'd be moving there with Lisa. She was interested in horses. I was obviously interested in computers and also music, and giving no indication as to where we had visited or where we were coming from. I put this out to, I don't know, 6 or 7 news groups, and I got, I think, just over 100 responses from people. And in sheer number alone, Austin, Texas, and San Francisco, the Bay Area, were the ones at the top of the list. So from that, we then planned a vacation to each place and wound up choosing Austin for a variety of reasons. But we would not have made that move to Texas were it not for being able to reach out on Usenet and talk to these other people all around the world. And it was this thing where, you know, technology sort of transcended itself. And that, to me, that's where it really matters, right? Is when you can take this stuff. And don't get me wrong, I love just playing with technology for the sake of playing with it, right? But kind of the point of this episode was to find those times where it really made a big, big difference. And that certainly did. I mean, it was, you know, it was a radical change for our lives when we moved down there. Like I said, we'd never lived together, but we also had no jobs. We had to find a place to live and, you know, all this stuff, but yeah, you know, it worked out. So it was good. But if it were not for Usenet, I don't know how else I would have done it. I'm sure we would have figured something out, but Usenet was instrumental in allowing that to happen. So that was the
Usenet
first one on my list.
For the uninitiated, Usenet being a system, if I could describe it, but a Usenet is, I think, a huge, I'm going to call it a bulletin board, which is a system where you have what we're going to call news groups, and each one has a specific topic, and they're broken down in hierarchies. And of course, anyone can post a message, and anyone can read a message, and anyone can reply to a message. And but it's this big, I think, for the most part, global community, and I think it's still in place. You can use it to either write text messages, or some people actually use it to transfer files, whether they be wares or pictures or whatever. But it's still a very active, from what I can tell, a global system for posting and reading messages and replying. And again, a sense of, you know, kind of like I talked about, a sense of community. Yeah. You reached out. It's like, well, I don't know if anybody's going to read this. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it, you know, what's interesting is up until, well, certainly in the last 7 years, it was probably about 5 years ago that Comcast killed off their newsgroup server. But you used to get access to Usenet servers pretty much as part of your ISP, right? I mean, certainly with all my dial-up accounts, I had access to whatever that host's Usenet server was, and I could use it. And then when I got broadband, Charter had one that when I had them down in Connecticut, and SBC had one when I had DSL down in Connecticut, and then Comcast had one up here, and Time Warner had one when I had that in Texas. That was my first cable modem was that, you know, non-DOCSIS Time Warner thing that, I mean, it, you know, it was a long time ago, but yeah.
And actually in the early 90s, I was actually a Usenet, I was the admin for our corporate news server.
Very cool.
Well, no one else was willing to do it. The thing was, I realized at that point, so it was when I was doing my last corporate gig in the early 90s, and I realized, you know what? Usenet could be a valuable tool. Of course, it's been superseded now by the web and all that. But back then, Usenet was a way for people to communicate with companies and indicate their satisfaction, or more often than not, dissatisfaction. And I still remember I would go, and the reason I lobbied for this, and we actually had it available, I think our connection at one point was through BBN, and I'm like, you know what? We got to set up a news server, number one, so people can have access to this throughout the company. And it was mostly the turbo geeks who felt it was important.
Right.
But back then I was like, you know, we got to set up a news group server because, you know, we got to monitor this channel for business reasons. And number two, we can reply to people. And I still remember having customers who were complaining about problems with the company. And I would relay this, and I'm like, you know, look, there's someone on Usenet or in this news group that says, you know, that this aspect of our company sucks, and can you address this? And they would. And then the people were like, oh my gosh, the power of the internet. Yay. And it was, but I felt so strongly about it that I actually, you know, dedicated a computer and actually worked with our ISP at the point at that time and said, look, you know, I'll, you know, give me the feed in and out, and, you know, I'll administer the server and set up a, you know, get some hard drives and establish it. But
wow, that's pretty cool, man. I mean, that's
it's like a precursor to Twitter now, Comcast cares and those,
right? Right, it's what people are using.
Well, it was hardcore because, you know, whenever I was, you know, when I again in my last corporate gig, there were so many times when the people I was working with, mostly the techies, just realized the reach of the technology and realized it's not just technology, but it's, you know, a way for you to find out that customers are unhappy and try to meet their needs. And of course now, as you guys are pointing out, I think it's, you know, now it's Twitter and other mechanisms. But back then, the only vehicle people had is like, you know, I'm going to get on Usenet and say these guys suck and let's see if anything happens. And I would set up filters or whatever to monitor and say, okay, if you find the, you know, company name and something like that, then, you know, forward the message to me because maybe it's something we can take care of. And
Yeah. That's very cool, man. I had no idea that you did. That's awesome. That's great.
All at the speed of dial up too, right?
We had a T1 at least.
Okay.
So when even now, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, a T1 is 1.5 megabits a second, I think.
That's right. I know.
Which now is, you know, I mean,
we used to having a T1. I mean, that was it.
Well, that was the funny thing is that, you know, so at one point I worked for a company that had T1, and then now, I mean, and I kept joking at one point because the thing was they were kind of slow to roll this out to the employee population. I'm like, dude, you know what? I have more bandwidth at home than the company has. It's like, that's wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually somebody got it, you know, eventually more and more people got it that, yes, all right, this is, you know, I mean, there were points in time where people were shaking their fists saying the internet should not be used for commerce, blah, blah, blah. And I could understand. And I think I was part of that mindset at the early point when it was still a research and educational and you know, kind of, you know, propeller head thing and not a commercial thing. But everybody knew that it had to boil down to something that, you know, would help drive business.
Well, you know, yeah, I mean, it didn't have to, but my feeling on a lot of that stuff, and, you know, I think the space program is slowly, finally heading in this direction. And obviously the internet is a classic example. I think it's up to the government to spend the R&D money to develop this stuff. I can't imagine something like the internet happening being generated by private industry, right? I mean, it's very, very difficult to do. The same is true of NASA. There's no way that that's going to happen from venture funding, right?
It's just not profitable.
It's
enough.
Just yeah. Right. Yeah. But that's the point.
No one's got that much money
of all this R&D and taking tax dollars and figuring it all out. But then once the government gets it to a point where it's like, hey, here it is, we figured it out. That's the point at which it is time for commercial industry to come in and say, yeah, okay, we'll take that. And now it's ours to grow and ours to maintain. And it's not up to the government to keep spending money and doing this. And the internet was a classic example of that, like I said. And the space program is, you know, with Branson and what he's doing and Richard Garriott, you know, kind of did his own. I mean, he created his own thing, but that's the idea is, you know, figure it out. Take what's existed and now build on it. So yeah. And any of those things, I mean, when the internet kind of went through that transition, it happened very, very quickly, but there were, everybody was a vocal opponent to it. And you said you were, and I probably was too. I mean, it's like, oh wait, you're going to ruin this. And it's like, no, this is what's supposed to happen. It's, you know, we invested in this and now it's supposed to turn around and help us. So that's good. That's good. Twitter came up in that last little discussion about your pioneering of customer service via the internet, John, and I had Twitter on my list of things that have changed, had, you know, impact beyond that. It specifically because of this show, Twitter has been a fantastic way for me and John, I think too, to keep in touch with all of you. It makes it so easy for one person to keep in touch with literally thousands, because you're not all contacting us at the same time, but it allows for some, I'll use air quotes, you know, interpersonal interactions, in a way that would have been impossible if you had if we were just doing this as a regular radio show before Twitter or anything like that. So Twitter was actually on my list because of the show, because of the podcast. And you know, my guess is you feel the same way about that too, John.
You know, I had mixed feelings because it's funny in that you introduced me to it. And I think it was when we were at the, when it was still called New Media Expo.
No,
I've been on Twitter for about 4 or 5 years ago, or was it the Podcast Expo?
I know you're right. It was either, I think it was Blog World Expo where I introduced you.
I don't know
to
if it changed the Blog World yet. And actually I'm going to that later in the week
that's
in
right.
New York City now, but,
but whatever.
Anyways, you introduced me to it, but it was a trade show that we were at and you, first, I heard the things about it, and the problem is, a lot of people just. It's very hard for a lot of people to describe the essence of it to other people, and I've had this problem too, trying to convince friends and family to adopt it. It's either you get it or you don't. And I think is the thing is until you drew me into it and told me, you know what, this may be, and I think the justification was, you know what, there's a bunch of Mac people going to this trade show, and you know what, you may want to get on Twitter because it's a good way to kind of keep in touch with people in near real time, people that you know. And
yeah,
to me, then all of a sudden the switch flipped. It was this thing that had been, that my perception, what is it? It was something irrelevant. It's a waste of time. It's like, who's going to sit there watching all these tweets and, you know, all this garbage from people you don't know and blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden it turned into a relevant tool, which not only you and I, but, you know, most of our, you know, at least Mac crowd adopt, because to me the first use was, again, I'm at a show, I'm at an event, and I need to know what's happening and what's cool and what's not cool. And to me, it's one of the better uses of the technology to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, it's good stuff. What do you have next on your list there, John?
Back to the past. So I'm going to wrap up. Oh no, I got a growl alert. I'm going to wrap up. So the radio thing. The only thing I want to wrap up with the radio thing is that the other thing that I got into with my radio pals was not only CB, but scanning. And this is a trend with what I like to do with technology. But it was getting a radio scanner, or what they call a police scanner. And yes, we listened to the police because a lot of the people that I hung out with, we had not only CBs, but we had vehicles. And we tended to like to drive around town and hang out. And sometimes it would attract the attention of the and some of the members of the group may have been unruly and noisy, and they would attract the attention of the local law enforcement. Well, how do they communicate? You guessed it, with the radio. Well, hey, you can get the special radio that listens to the cop channels, and actually you can get a book that lists all the cop channels, or go online and get that. So it was endlessly hilarious to me that we would all be hanging out in an area, you know, trying not to be too noisy or stuff, but some people again would get out of control. And then all of a sudden you would hear on the radio, you know, report of youths gathering and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, oh, okay, everybody start up the car, drive away. It was like Keystone Cops. It was hilarious. I just loved it. So,
yeah, no, the scanner.
Moving.
You got me hooked on the scanner too.
But the scanner wasn't only listening to police, but it also, you could listen to ham radio. You could listen to 2 meter. You could listen to cell phones for a while there. It's like, whoa. So,
yeah.
But scanning was another thing. It's like all this stuff that is hidden is all of a sudden available to you in this world of RF technology.
I still use my scanner. I still have a Pro 43, a realistic, a Radio Shack scanner. And the only thing that
Pro 43 handheld.
Yeah. The only thing
I think I sold that to you. Did I sell that to you?
I bought it new from,
cause
from
I had
Radio
one
Shack.
Too. And I lost track of it. I thought I sold it to you, or I sold it to somebody, but I think I still have three, at least three. So I have a desktop, a mobile. No, I think I have two, but still.
Yeah. But I use it to listen to the local air traffic control. Cause you can pick up, you know, and hear the planes coming into to Pease right locally here. So that part of it's fun. Of course, it's much easier than turning on the scanner to just go to liveatc.com and listen to it right there. They even have an iOS app. So that's sort of, you know, taken the place of the scanner, but you can actually hear the stuff at, you know, radio, air traffic control is still over regular analog, non-encrypted, open channel, single channel communications, whereas scanners, you can get scanners now that'll listen to the police stuff, but the old ones won't do it because they're now on these digital switches.
My local one is still on, I think, VHF. It's still, you know, it's a repeater system, but I can pick it up. So
that's cool.
So most of the local ones here are not using any sort of fancy digital thing because, you know, I think a lot of them tend to get complicated, you know, as far as switching and trunking and the, you know, it's just broadcast and receive.
Right. That's right. Yeah.
So, So I'm glad my local town, you know, Fairfield still uses a, you know, I think two frequencies or a few frequencies, and they have a repeater, and I can pretty much hear both sides of the conversation, and it's kind of interesting.
Cool.
The other thing I want to bring up, though, the other thing, Dave, that I think was an inspiration for both of us was modems. So, of course, as most of you probably know, modems, what does a modem do? A modem let your computer communicate with another computer over analog phone lines, which they certainly weren't meant to do. But when you get a modem, then, hey, all of a sudden. And similar to the pattern I mentioned with radio is that the same sort of thing happened with modems. So initially it was single user. So it was a user typically dialing into a bulletin board or another computer and maybe having a one-on-one conversation. And so that was certainly cool. And both you and I did that, Dave. And then I ran a bulletin board, you ran a bulletin board. And the person calling in certainly had the ability to chat with, you know, the mighty SysOp, which is what we both were.
Right. That's right.
Or system operator. But then it got interesting because then we had some people in the area who tended to... I'm not sure how they did it, but would have access to multiple analog phone lines. And so I think the biggest one, Dave, that you and I both ran into, or I certainly did, and that was another social circle, was Diversidial.
Well, Diversidial, Jim's Diversidial, most specifically, which was run in Connecticut, somewhere in Connecticut. I forget exactly where. But that's where you and I met. That was the first time you and I interacted with each other.
Oh, we did.
It was on Jim's. Yeah.
So Diversidial, I think, was a system that may have run on other systems, but I think initially ran on the Apple II.
I think it was only on the Apple II. You put a bunch of Apple Cap modems in the slots, and that was how it worked.
Or other. But I think that the ability, it hinged on the fact that the Apple II had. Yeah, and I think it was mostly slots. So you could either get a serial card and then a modem. But the thing is, because the Apple II, I think, had 6 or 7 expansion slots, you could, in theory, if you had the money and the phone lines, you could set up a 6 or 7 user, and I think you could also link them. But there was one guy, yeah, I think I haven't been in touch with the guy. But he set up a system where 7 people could log into the system and chat, and it was called Diversidial.
6 plus him, right?
Right, and then the software was called Diversidial. And you could either get a free account, or I think you could get a paid account and then get a guaranteed, you know, amount of time and things like that. And that lent itself to things like, yeah, I think you and I meeting and then we actually had, and some of them got kind of weird because the thing is online.
As with any chat system, things get weird.
You don't know who you're dealing with, especially.
Yeah.
Are they male? Are they female? How old are they? And some of the gatherings
not to overgeneralize, but 99.9% of the time, the question was, the answer was yes, they're male. I mean, just because that's what most people that had modems back in that day were. Again, it's right. not to be sexist or anything, just the reality. What it was.
No, and it was just a. Yeah, and I'm sure it's changed. Well, obviously, I think it's changed. But the thing was, I mean, at some of these gatherings, you would have 25 to 30 guys and to every one female. And it was like, that's all I'm going to say about that.
That's right.
It's just how it happened because the guys were
the geeks
back then, the tech geeks and the ones that ran the bulletin boards. And I mean, you know, I got to remember the thing is if I go through the list of people that I knew were system operators, ran bulletin boards, I would say it was probably about a 30 to 1, if not more, ratio between ones that were male and ones that were female. So not being sexist, just pointing out the facts back when you and I did that sort of thing.
I'm trying.
So again, modems, I think, so to wrap it up, the point I'm making is that modems again evolved from a single, from a passive, somewhat passive utility with you and the sysop to all of a sudden. And then there was the system that my friend Steve over in Wilton, and I'm still in touch with him on Facebook, but a friend of mine actually wrote his own on a PDP. I think it was actually a computer. So he worked for a company and they were actually ditching a PDP computer. And he's like, you know what? No, don't throw it away. And he actually wrote his own software.
Yep.
Was it Telcom?
Comlink.
Comlink. That's it. Oh, yeah. You remember his better than mine.
Yeah.
Remember, Telcom was another one, but Comlink. And my buddy Steve, who I'm still in touch with on Facebook. But that was funny because then, so he was local. So he was in the next town over and we became friends through the local bulletin board scene. So he was a different animal in that he was more the multi-user chat thing. And he had the PDP mini computer and then the multiple Hayes modems. Mm-hmm. And I remember going over to his place, we'd, you know, get a couple of 6-packs and hang out. And then we started getting silly. And the thing was, there were certain people on the chat system that we didn't necessarily like.
He's
on line 3.
You've told this story before, but go ahead, tell it again.
Yeah. And he's like, yeah, you see that modem over there? That's line 3. You know what? Hit the switch on that one. And we disconnect the guy. Or even better, and this was this is the part that I found hilarious. So not, you know, because that's kind of mean. I mean, you know, turning them off and disconnecting them. I mean, we'd only do that, you know, to people that were calling in for free, just to free it up for another person. But then he got clever and he's like, you know what? Check this out. So he was savvy enough. So he actually wrote a piece of software that would encourage people to disconnect. Because what it would do is that because he wrote the software, he would write a little piece of software. Now, if you've used the modem, you know that sometimes modems run into line noise because it's an analog phenomenon. And sometimes if there are hiccups, yeah, you may see little weird characters, but to wrap it up quickly, what happened is that he wrote a program that would inject what appeared to be line noise into the communication stream of the person that we wanted to go away. And they eventually would sometimes.
That's fun.
So it's just very clever on his part. It was hilarious.
No, it's good.
But it was great because we would sit there and we were the guys running the system, and we also had a, you know, another, in addition to Diversidial, we had this system, Comlink, that was another local community. It was mostly people who were within, you know, I would say 30 to 50 miles of each other. And the thing that held us back was that we had to be able to call each other locally, at least legally.
Right. Well, anyway. Yeah.
Right. And that's what all these communities had, I think, in common. And there was a local sense of community, both with bulletin board, your bulletin board, the Diversidial, and also Comlink, is that it was pretty much a local calling thing, because unless you broke the law, you couldn't call long distance without raking up a big bill.
That's right. Yeah, no. And that's true. And that, you know, the bulletin boards, I had it on my list too for that reason, actually, that it would transcend the board, because we would occasionally, you know, maybe once a year, twice a year, we would get together and we'd host a gathering of all the users of the bulletin board. And it wouldn't be all of them, of course, but, you know, you'd probably get 10, 15, 20 people together to show up at, you know, we'd meet at some park or some beach or whatever. And people
Cranberry Park?
Yeah, right. People would bring, you know.
That's a Norwalk.
Sodas
I think, right?
Yeah. And people, it would just be a big picnic is essentially what would happen. And we'd all get together and it was nice because you could, you know, somebody'd show up and you wouldn't recognize them. And then they'd come up and introduce themselves and say, this is my name on my handle on the bulletin board. And you'd be like, oh, holy cow, you know, and it was actually a great way to extend that community. I always, like I said, you know, I always looking for this show, especially, looking for those angles where the technology actually makes life better and to be able to meet people and all of that good stuff. Yeah, go ahead, Pete.
Yeah, I want to jump in on that too. I had I want to say it was 92. I deployed to Japan, and that was the technology. It was a modem. I had a 14.4. Man, I was smoking.
Wow.
I paid over $100 for that thing too, I think.
You might have paid more than that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I had figured out how to set it up on a receive mode, and I got deployed to Japan. So, well, it was still somewhat expensive. Lacking any other means, it was, generally speaking, using the APO system. It was still better than a week and a half to get the written word back and forth between the wives who were stuck back in the States on the East Coast and us in Japan. So what I did is I set my computer up to receive calls on the line when I knew my wife would be at work. And I had a little laptop, a little Tandy laptop with me that I brought to Japan. Now, it cost a little bit of money, not too much, I'm sure, but so that we would type things like the squadron CO had his report to all the wives. And I was also able to send immediate letters to my wife, email, if you will.
Right.
You know, without an email address, but just directly to my phone line, it would pick it up, and I had a way to transfer a file right there, and she knew to go in and check when she got home from work. And so that's how in 1992, we kept the squadron a little bit closer. All the guys were able to write to their wives and that sort of thing. And, you know, the agreement was she would, you know, eyes only. She wouldn't look at it. She'd print it out and send it to, you know, whoever, you know, down the street. So we were able to write back and forth, basically on an almost instantaneous basis, for lack of a
So wow, so you set up your own email gateway. Hack together,
you know,
and
had to print it out.
Bailing,
I mean, like
wire.
In, you know, we didn't, I'm sure the squadrons had fax machines. I'm not sure they did in those days. So, you know, lacking a fax machine, and
yeah, I'm sure there's some security problem that you totally skirted by, but dude, that's awesome.
Oh yeah, it was great. So that was how we you know, in the early days, used that high-speed modem technology to transfer written word back and forth. That and the, you know, the weekly phone call, which I seem to remember spending $20 or $30 a week on telephone.
Yeah.
So
phone, god, you know, I was ranting yesterday because cell phone bills are just ridiculous with all the fees and everything. I mean, we have the kids and everything on our thing, but we're paying like we're paying over $200 a month for a cell phone. And I said, it's just them getting us back for all the blue boxing and freaking days and all that stuff. But,
I'm glad you mentioned that, Dave.
It used to be really expensive. I mean, you were paying, sometimes you'd pay $1 a minute for a phone call. I mean, it was crazy. Of course, this was when they were doing their, they were paying down the debt for building out the infrastructure. Yeah. Right. And that obviously changed. I guess it was probably late 80s, early 90s.
Sprint started coming in and divestiture of AT&T. And
that's right. Yeah. And then obviously rates dropped. And now we get, unlimited
video calls.
Right. Well, exactly.
And,
so
in fact, I had a conversation with my wife in Brussels today, a video Skype call.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So the next topic I wanted to bring up was cloud services. Again, along the lines of impacting life. I we've talked about this on the show. I mean, this won't come as any great surprise, but it really was a pretty profound impact. My life is such that I need to travel with a computer for business and that sort of thing. And it's been that way for almost 15 years. So the thing used to be in 1998, I finally moved to a laptop as my main computer. I got my first laptop in 1995. Yeah. Right before I went on the road with Hypnotic Clambake. And we talked about this in, I think it was show number 200, maybe, where I used an acoustic coupler with that, and which was a modem. Actually, it was an acoustic coupler would then plug into the modem in my laptop. It was a PowerBook 520C, and I would I'd wrap that up against a payphone or whatever, and I was using AOL at the time because they had local dial-in numbers everywhere. And I was able to send email back and forth to Lisa, but that laptop was very underpowered and it was fine for traveling, but it certainly wasn't the machine I wanted to use every day, all day. Well, when Apple came out with the Pismo PowerBooks in 98, that was fast enough. It was a 400 megahertz G3 and it smoked, So I got the laptop and I moved everything to it because while it wasn't as fast as my desktop, anytime I needed to travel, I had everything with me so I could just grab the laptop and bring it. And I didn't have to worry, do I have this data here? Did I copy all my email? Did I do any of that? Well, now we've kind of come full circle. And last year I got away from having a laptop as my main machine. And it's because of cloud services. It makes it so that I can go anywhere. I don't even have to have my own computer. I can get on any computer or an iPad or an iPhone. And I can get at this data that's out there. And obviously, there's setups that are easier than some, but cloud services have really made a big, big difference. It was funny. The other night I was at a gig and I'd done up a set list, but I forgot to print it out, or I'd printed it out. I didn't have the printout with us, whatever it was. And so I thought, well, one of the guys had an iPad and I had my iPhone. I said, fine. I'd saved it. And my documents folder, that one was on Dropbox. And it's like, okay. So I just pulled it up on Dropbox. Like, here it is. Pages document. We can see it, and now we've got the set list. We're good to go.
Yeah. Got rid of that whole dilemma of what to take with me if I have a main computer and a laptop. I faced that same thing. And I used to fight with myself all the time over trying to keep those hard drives synced. And of course, the laptop hard drive in those days was nowhere near as big as the main computer. As my desktop was, and it was a fight. And I think it was probably about 97 or 98 when I finally went, all right, I'm just going to use a laptop. And it was a big old honking Dell. I know that thing must have weighed 8 pounds. And I finally came around about 9 years later, went to Mac.
Yeah. Well, it took you a while, Pete. It took a while. That's right.
Well, actually, I did. My wife wanted it at the time. My wife wanted to get a Mac because she was into teaching and they had a lot of really great educational software. But the Mac didn't run my flight planning software that I wanted. And that's why I had gone to PC.
You still with us here, John?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. I just wanted, you'd been quiet as I was telling my story. And then I realized I'm having a conversation with Pete and it's like, oh,
no, I was babbling.
All right. Good.
Just letting you guys.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. It's good. I just wanted to make sure we were, you know, still connected here on Skype. Cause that's,
yes, sir.
That's a interesting thing. So, all right. So we got, you know, we got time for a couple of more here. Do you have any last one you want to throw in for us here, John?
Yeah, probably the last one. And the other one that drew me into the whole computing circle here was the magic of putting something in a chip. And I didn't think of putting it that way until I put it that way now. So
okay.
My first exposure to a computer was, as I think I mentioned, was a PDP back in middle school. And it was a PDP 11 something. It was a teletype.
Yep.
And dude, it was so cool. So I was one of the people that I think was mathematically or scientifically inclined. And they're like, hey, you know what, kid, check this out. Even though, you know, I wasn't supposed to. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this thing is so cool. And it was like the small room and, you know, there were only a few kids and teachers in there, but it was just the coolest thing ever. And I think the coolest thing was one, I think they had the adventure game running on it. So that was one cool thing is that you type something into the computer, you know, it's a game, Advent, most of you have heard of it. If not, look it up, Advent. And you type in, and it's a game where you explore a dungeon or whatever, and you type in something and it responds to you. And it almost has a semblance of intelligence or cognizance. And it's like, wow. So I type in something that gets back to me. And it's like, maybe I can do this on my own. And that was the second step. And then someone showed me, well, here's this language called BASIC. All right, you know, as the name implies, it's BASIC. But you could write your own program to do this. And, you know, the one that most people would do is, you know, input, what's your name? A string. And then input A string or something like that. You know, print, what's your name? Input A string. And then your name is whatever. And it's like, wow, the computer is so smart. Of course, yeah. Real programming goes way beyond that. But sure. It was just a glimmer back then, being, you know, in middle or high school of, oh my gosh, I can make, and that's what drove me. So number one was seeing a computer being able to do your bidding. But then number two, the other thing was the advance in the technology. In that, so when I used when I was first exposed to a PDP level computer, here was the bad news about that computer. So the basic computer language, from what I recall, took under an hour to load from paper tape. Okay, paper tape. What did you load the paper tape on? You loaded it on a teletype. Okay, I'll leave people to look in there to Google that. But still, it was painful. And every now and then, these computers were persnickety. And sometimes if you zap them with static, they would forget everything. You had to reload BASIC.
Yeah.
And to me, the big eye-opener was when they got the first Apple II computer. And I was one of the little, you know, wee little geeks they introduced to check this out. And like, here's this Apple II computer. It's going to replace our PDP in the computer room. And they turned it on. And I'm like, and then they were like, oh, yeah, and there's BASIC in here. And I'm like, well, wait, how can you do that? They're like, it's on this little chip. And that was it. It was like, oh, are you kidding me? So BASIC, rather than loading it from this mechanical monstrosity into memory, is on this little chip. I'm like, I'm sold, man. And that's what really just, because the
interesting,
the velocity or the velocity of innovation in the computer space was swept me away. I can't believe I just said that, but I think it really was what happened. I was like, oh my gosh, things are moving so fast. This is just the coolest technology or the coolest profession that I think I should, that I think will help me out in my life. And so far it really has, but that was just an eye opener. It's like, all right, loading from 45 minutes to turning on and it's on a chip. Bam.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm done. I'm sold. The computers are the greatest.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never had that realization the way you did, only because I started the computer I first started using. Basically, I had BASIC, you know, in the ROM. So I understood there was a history, but I never experienced the change firsthand. So it never hit me as hard as it did you. But it totally makes sense. Wow. Very interesting. I have one thing that I want to kind of wrap things up with, but I wanted to throw this Strava, this bike app thing out there. That's actually been a very recent kind of life impact for me, because I have a bike and I ride occasionally. And then, you know, you hipped me to this Strava thing, or I guess a listener did, but it was, you know, you were sort of the catalyst to that.
Yeah. Did.
Yeah, but you were the catalyst.
Well, I found the iBike thing. So I got iBike. iBike gave me a very nice enclosure, which I think is an awesome enclosure, and I still use it even with the Strava app. But they have an app. But
sure.
That's what got me started is a something that protects your iDevice from the elements, but sure. You can of course run Strava.
Right. Well, and I run Strava with it in my pocket, but just the fact that I now have.
Do you use the walk version? Because there's a walk and a bike version.
No, I use the bike version. But the fact that I now have this app that tracks what I ride, it's actually not forced, but it's encouraged me to ride more regularly. Because I think, oh yeah, I haven't logged anything in Strava yet. You know, this week, or I've only logged one ride in Strava. I want to, you know, make sure I have at least two a week in there. And it's a good way to remind myself to exercise. I mean, I love it when I get out on the bike. It's I don't really even think of it as exercise, but you know, it's that encouragement. And so it's yet again, that technology that sort of, you know, makes life better. And that is the point. So. Yeah. So that was my little thing. Yeah, Pete. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, I use technology now in my daily life to include, you know, the jet I fly is an electric jet, as we say, you know, and I learned on the round dial jets and round dial jets, Cessna 152, not really a round dial jet.
That's not a jet,
no,
Pete.
No, it's not. Oh, man.
How long has it been since
how
you flew?
How much jet time have I logged? Yeah. So, but no, you started off with the steam gauges, as we call them, and now you need to learn to type fast with one hand and figure out where you're going. You know, control the airplane with the other hand, and it's amazing that how much you just take for granted the technology in everything that we do. And I remember being a kid and looking at Star Trek and thinking, "Wow, how far out is that?" And you talked about it, I think, on a recent show. You know, the iPhone in some ways is a more powerful communicator than that thing ever was. I mean, they just didn't have it in their minds. Something so small could be so powerful. They use it now as a navigation device instead of a compass and a map. You know, I mean, geez, remember the brick phones? They were hundreds of dollars. And now, you know, the minutes are virtually unlimited. I mean, you pay good money, but, all that. And long distance used to be expensive, and now it's practically free. And I laughed at this morning. I mentioned we had a video call, with my wife, who's in Brussels today. And my six-year-old was so impressed by it that he was like, "Yeah, Mom, good morning, love you," and walked downstairs to go play Wii. He wasn't the least bit impressed with the fact that he had a video conference with his mother who was across the ocean. I mean, things that when we were kids, to have something like that, it was science fiction in the wildest extremes.
Yep.
And it's brought so much of that closer. And the last one I have to laugh at, if you've ever seen the movie Lost in Translation, it's kind of an offbeat movie. It's Bill Murray, and he's over in Japan, and he's kind of an aging star who's out of it. But he's gone over there to film a whiskey commercial.
Okay.
Being an international pilot, I have found myself in a hotel room in Osaka at 2 o'clock in the morning with nothing to do but play with the electric curtain switch, open, close, lights on, light, you know, because everything's remote control by the bed in Japan, sure. You know, in the hotel rooms. And because there's nothing on TV in English at that hour in the morning, you know, and there was, you know, one channel, that sort of thing. And now with technology, if I happen to be awake at 2 o'clock in the morning and can't sleep and I've got nothing left to read, I just turn on the laptop and watch my Slingbox or watch Hulu or make a video phone call back home. So it's made this world so smaller. It's a double-edged sword because I can always be reached, which isn't always good, but it's been amazing. I mean, I feel really fortunate and blessed to live in this age of technology and to watch the speed with which it's developed to wired in handsets and copper wire to communicate around the world at dollars per minute to this has been astounding.
It's amazing. No, we really have lived in a very interesting time technology wise. And it's why we, you know, those of us of our age, our relative age here, do what we do, because it's been such a, like you said, John, the speed at which things changed and at which technology got faster and better. It's just amazing. So, yeah.
I have a fish shake.
Go ahead, John.
A big fish shake.
Go ahead.
I didn't do it.
Wasn't me.
Well, no, you didn't. No, and you guys have not. But I have been in numerous, not so much with friends, though sometimes I'll chastise them for doing this, but I've noticed as of late. So some people are saying, well, you know, American or whatever society is going to be taken over and we're going to be turned into soulless drones. And I see this to a certain extent in that I see a lot of people, number one, driving or operating a vehicle, whether it be a bicycle or walking on the sidewalk or operating your car. Stop it. Please pay attention to what you're doing in a social arena. Please, especially, and I got to especially wag my finger at some of the local law enforcement here. I saw one just hours ago, Dave. It was a guy, he was driving an unmarked cop car and he was talking on his phone and he was not being terribly observant. So sorry, fearful police, you may yell at me, but guys, you got to pay attention to what you're doing. I understand your law enforcement and you feel that you're above it all, but no, you're not. Stop talking on your phone or your device. And number two, just in general, I see a lot of people kind of. So we're talking about the social aspect of the technology, but then what I see again is people drawing back in that they're in a social, potentially social situation, but they're fiddling with their device.
Yep. Yeah.
To absolutely. The detriment of being active or engaged in now some.
With the people
and
around
sometimes
you,
yeah. Maybe you shouldn't be. Now again, if you're on the train or you're on public transportation, then maybe the expectation is not that you should be engaged. But number one, especially if you're operating any sort of vehicle, whether it be a bicycle or a motorcycle or a vehicle, stop it. Put your thing down. Stop it.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Yeah.
Or in social situations, yeah. I see a lot of this in that, you know, people where you're expected to be somewhat social, whether it be a grocery store or, you know, a mall or something like that. And people are just engrossed in their device communicating with who knows who. So to me, and I think you and I, Dave, we said we talk about the downside. To me, that's the downside of
actually,
this.
We said we would, but that's okay.
Well, no, we should. Although I think is that people get sometimes so absorbed in the device that it, to me, that's the bad part of this whole.
Yeah, no, like I said at the beginning, I specifically kind of wanted to focus on where it's been good as opposed to bad. But that's kind of the classic overreaching example is that it's very easy because we can communicate with all these other people. It's very easy to let, especially those of us that, you know, get very distracted easily or whatever, very easy to be in a group socially and yet be communicating with people outside that group and totally ignoring the people in front of you. So yeah, it's possible. But I do want to get one last thing in here.
Go.
Because, well, it's interesting. Most, I think, perhaps not all, most of the things that we've mentioned in this show have allowed you and I specifically to either meet or keep in touch with each other. And it's always been about technology. I mean, technology has always been that thing that's sort of bound us together. And this podcast is no different. In fact, without technology and without a lot of it, this podcast wouldn't happen. And this is a very real thing. And we've got, you know, relationships at various levels with all of our listeners. And it's a very personal thing that we've, because of technology, I mean, we've got Skype that we're using here to communicate as though we're in the same room. Today we're using Justin TV or whatever it is to stream that out. And for the record, I do want to get to a point here where we're always streaming Mac Geek Gab when we do it live, but we won't be using Justin TV. I think we're going to set up our own broadcast server. I've got to work out some of the technical details of that, but that's something on the short term radar. But anyway, you know, we're using for today Justin TV to stream this out to those of you that wanted to listen along. Obviously, we'll use, you know, CashFly and all of that to stream the recorded version, which is what most of you will get, of course. But yeah, I mean, it's this podcast wouldn't exist without it, and yet. To me, this is a another classic example of where, you know, the end product transcends the technology and without really
transcends.
Yeah. Mm. Without really being it without intentionally doing this, you know, we've kind of talked about how it's the communication aspect of technology, yeah, for the most part. We've had a couple of things that have not been that, but that's been a, you know, a very driving theme throughout this show, it seems. So very interesting. I think that gets us to where we're going to start wrapping this up. Let me see if I can find the band.
The band, where?
You never know. That's right.
Let's give them the day off.
Boys, come back. Come on in.
That's right.
It's a nice day. If it's like here, it's a nice day, man. I wouldn't be surprised.
Not here.
No.
Well, it's okay now. The sun's sort of starting to poke through, but. So we do want to thank, you mentioned the communicators thing. Of course, that was when I was talking about Michael Johnston's show. We Have Communicators. He converts this show to AAC and he also does his own podcast. We Have Communicators. So go ahead and listen to that. It's an excellent show. He does a fantastic job with it. Cashfly.com provides all of the bandwidth to get this from us to you. At least the downloadable version, that is. And then we do want to thank our sponsors, some of whom have been with us for a very, very long time. BB Edit from Barebone Software is still with us here in June. PDF Pen and Text Expander from Smile. About Barebone Software, they say that there's a iCloud-compatible version of Yojimbo coming this month. So we shall see. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Again, PDF Pen and Text Expander from Smile. They've been a sponsor of this show since pretty much the beginning of when we started taking sponsorships on it. And then also in June, Gazelle at gazelle.com for selling all of your used Apple products, your pre-loved Apple products, and various other things as well.
Or other, yeah. I was going to say, just Apple, but...
Yeah, they've got a big focus on Apple, though. Check out the site. They've made some changes there, and they're really focused on Apple products. I think that's what's worked out well for them, and so it's a whole different site than it was a year ago. I think they changed it maybe, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 months ago, something like that. So, I think that's it. You got anything else to add here, John? Before we finish up this.
All I can say is just I'm humbled and 400. Thank you so much. We got to thank the community that I think we've all built here for supporting us, and I'm hoping for another 400 shows.
That'll take another 7 years, maybe 5.5.
Well,
actually,
hopefully I will be on this mortal coil for at least that long, as will you.
That's the plan, my friend. That is the plan. All right, folks, we will talk to you in a week and a half. It will be
happening?
It will be Wednesday, June 13th. We will celebrate our 7th anniversary, but we'll be back to answering your questions, and we'll talk a little bit about whatever it is we learned at the WWDC keynote on Monday. Thank you very much. Have a great week, and don't get caught.
Made up.